It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Brand new for the 2022 season, it's the RVK. We're coming at you two ways on 2 days. It's Monday and Thursday. Jeremy J.N. Fiend Phoenix and me, Brandon Phoenix, a.k.a. I also hate Pitt. We are the Raspy Voice Kids. We are the Raspy Voice Kids podcast. You get pop culture Monday at 7 a.m. You get the West Virginia University podcast Thursdays at 7 a.m. Either way, no matter what we say, you're going to have fun. So, like we like to tell you, get at your boys.
Welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I am your host, Andy Mintz. Today, we are previewing / recapping a bunch of stuff related to Kansas men's and women's basketball. We have a couple games to talk about, but then also are looking forward to a Kansas-ranked matchup against the Oklahoma Sooners for the women's side. And on the men's side, we have another ranked matchup of Kansas welcoming in the Iowa State Cyclones. We have Levi Stevenson of Wide Bright Natty Light joining us to talk about that Iowa State game coming up, but that will be in the second segment. First segment, look, we've got a lot of stuff to talk about because this has been a super eventful week, as will be the case, I think, from now all the way through April, hopefully April, when both teams may potentially still be playing in the NCAA tournament. But, you know, Kansas, the women, we will start with the women. They struggled, had a difficult week last week. You know, we already talked a little bit about the Baylor game, Kansas losing that game against Baylor at home. They did go on the road, and we were talking with Jamie Steyer of the 1012 Podcast Network. But, you know, before that Texas game, they did go down to Texas, and while they played them tough for quite a while, Texas was able to pull out that win, pull out that victory. You know, not necessarily unexpected with the way that this conference is this year, that they would just struggle on the road. I wouldn't even necessarily say they struggled. I mean, you had Tyana Jackson who got 19 points. You got Holly Kurzgeeter that got 20 points. Unfortunately, they were just not able to overcome what was a very, very hot shooting Texas team. I believe Texas shot somewhere in like the 68% or something like that for the game. I had it pulled up, but like this was a very hot shooting Texas team that Kansas was just not able to overcome. They did lose that one 72-59, but that was a close game going into the fourth quarter, and Kansas just did not have enough to go ahead and pull it out. They did trail the entire way there, but there was multiple times where they got it down to single digits, got it fairly close before Texas was able to just go ahead and pull away again. You know, these are the kind of games you're going to have on the road in conference play. It's going to be very difficult for a team. You were hoping that they would bounce back after that game against Baylor, and I think for the most part they did. Like they didn't get the result that they wanted, but they did bounce back. They did play fairly well. You know, they did run into a few issues. Obviously, you know, it was not good that they let Shaylee Gonzalez score 26 points, and she had a huge fourth quarter to lead the Longhorns there. But I mean, they did a really good job on Roy Harmon. She had 11 assists, but only 8 points. You know, they did a good job on some of the Texas players, but Texas is a talented team, just like Kansas is a talented team. You are a little worried about the fact that Zakiya Franklin, you know, only got 7 points in her 37 minutes. But, you know, she was 2 of 12 from the field, which is not great, not something you really want to see, but she's going to have off nights. The fact that it wasn't all three of them, you know, all three of the main guys in terms of Jackson, Kurzgeeter, and Franklin all having off nights was helpful. Unfortunately, they just didn't have enough. That's going to happen. They are going to go ahead and bounce back, and they have an opportunity to bounce back here on the road against a very, very tough Oklahoma team. Oklahoma is a team that you do have to worry about because they are very proficient offensively. They are one of the best teams in the nation in terms of their offense, but their defense is very lacking. They allow a ton of points. If you look over on our friend of the podcast here, of the network here, the CBB Analytics, you know, they are very, very good. They're in like the 20th, the 20s in terms of offensive, but to 200 and something defensively. So they are not a very good defensive team. They have won. When they have won this year, it has been by outscoring the teams that they're playing. I mean, you just look at some of the recent scores, you know, that they had. And, you know, so like they beat Texas Tech 89-79. They beat Iowa State 82-79. You know, they beat, or they lost to Baylor by giving up 81 points. The opponents that they've been playing have been able to score quite a bit against this Oklahoma team. And so this is a game where you have to see, you know, you have to see the Kansas Jayhawks get back to scoring. You have to see them put up some really good offense. If you allow this Oklahoma team to shut down your offense, then you have to start wondering what's going on. Why is the offense having some issues? I don't think that's going to be a problem. I think this is going to be a good game for Zakiya Franklin to get right. And I do think that this is an opportunity for the Jayhawks to really kind of pound the advantage that they have down low. Oklahoma, like most teams here in the conference this year, do not have someone who is very, very, you know, extremely large down low that is going to do a ton of different things. They do have Maddie Williams. You know, she is their forward. She is only 5'11". So Kansas will have, you know, Tyana Jackson down there with a very significant size advantage. The issue is going to be, can she use that and can she avoid quick post players from taking advantage of her size by getting under her, by getting, you know, being more physical down low and making it difficult for her to really kind of get into rhythm and get into her game. So that is what I will be looking for from the Jayhawks. That is what I will be looking for to see if they can go ahead and get back on the winning ways here on the road. It will be a very interesting game. Make sure that you guys are paying attention to it. You know, we will be following it here. We will be definitely taking a look at it and figuring out what we can do. So, but now shifting over to the men, you know, we talked a little bit about that game that they had, against Oklahoma when I was talking with Robbie Triano. This is a huge matchup for the Jayhawks coming up, being at 4-0, getting that huge come from behind win against Oklahoma. We didn't dive too much into the specifics of that game just because we were kind of talking about the entire conference as a whole. So just looking at that result, looking at what Kansas was able to do, you know, being down by as many as they were down by, I mean, it was honestly just ridiculous how far down they were with just 5 minutes left. You know, 5 minutes left, they were down 71-63. No, I'm sorry. They were down by even more than that. Like, I mean, they were down by quite a bit, went on a 16-2 run to take the lead and then pull away for victory. You know, it was a very impressive performance by them. I was very, very happy to see what they were able to do. Grady Dick did not have a good night shooting, but he did come up with a couple, you know, very key rebounds there. But the main guy really to look at was KJ Adams. KJ Adams, again, for the, you know, fourth, fifth game in a row was phenomenal. On the inside, playing a completely different style of post play than we thought we were going to see coming into the season. Just the maturation to see what he has been able to do has just been absolutely, you know, energizing to see just how much energy he brings to the team, what he does, how well he helped them to perform the way that they need to. But Zach Clements, you know, was the surprise double-digit scorer for the Jayhawks in this one, making two threes, the only two threes that he took, and then making one of his two-point basket shots. Also getting two free throws. He was very active, got three offensive rebounds, He was a guy that I think was not going to get a lot of publicity for what he did. You know, he only had 12 minutes, but he was extremely successful in those 12 minutes. The kind of spark that Kansas really needed. And honestly, if I remember correctly, last year, it looked like he was going to have a similar sort of game against Oklahoma, but then got injured, got hit and had some injury issues. I believe he got hit in the face last year. I thought that was Oklahoma, the game in Allen Fieldhouse last season. So to see him come back in this particular game and really enjoy the success that he did was great to see. Kansas, I thought, struggled from a defensive standpoint, from an offensive standpoint, for the vast majority of that game, and then was able to turn it on at the end and win. That is a trend that cannot continue. Like, yes, this is a talented team that can come back, but this is not... I don't think they're as good of a team, as consistent of a team as the team last year was in terms of being able to handle falling so far behind and then having to scramble to come back. If this is something that they're going to do regularly, it's going to potentially be a problem for this team. They really need to stop getting so far behind. I feel like I was saying that, though, about last year's team. So we'll see how long they can keep this going. I will be very, very interested to see just how much, will they be clutch, what they're able to do in those late game situations to really be able to just, take a ridiculous situation and turn it into something positive. But speaking of, fantastic positive things, the sponsor here on the podcast, Home Field Apparel, and yes, that was a terrible segue, but we're going to go with it anyway. Home Field Apparel, the most comfortable vintage college sports apparel anywhere. They got t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies, joggers, so much more. Over 140 different schools, all kinds of fantastic logos. Great stuff that you are going to find from pretty much every school that you can possibly think of. They have so many great logos. I guarantee you're going to find something that you really want that you don't already have. I am still finding stuff that I love, that I really want, that I don't have. But you can go over to homefieldapparel.com, use promo code CHALK12. You can get 15% off your entire first order, and all orders over $100 have free shipping. All right. So really, really quick first segment here. But as is usual with Levi, we go quite a while, so I don't want to belabor this any longer than I need to. We will go ahead and throw it to a quick break. When we get back, we'll be talking with Levi Stevenson of Wide Right Natty Light to preview this Kansas-Iowa State game. We will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Welcome one, welcome all, and you are listening live to the one, the only Tortillas and Takes Podcast.
From football to softball to track and field, tune in to get the best coverage in everything that is Texas Tech.
Not only that, but find out what unsuspecting star we get to interview and put on the hot seat.
Whether you like corn or flour, eating them or throwing them, this tortilla is for you. So listen to Tortillas and Takes.
And as always, stay wrecked, people.
And we are back. I am joined now by Levi Stevenson. He is of Wide Right and Natty Light, here to preview the Kansas-Iowa State matchup that we all, of course, knew was going to be, for first place in the Big 12 at this point in the season. Right? Right, Levi?
I don't know about you. That's what I always assumed.
Yeah. It's funny because I tweeted this out as well, and I had basically said this conference is so ridiculous, right, that the only games that you can look at that you might think could be a, day off for the Jayhawks would be this two-game stretch coming up where you have Iowa State at home and then Kansas State on the road. Not expecting Iowa State and Kansas State to be as good as they are. Not necessarily saying that, it was going to be easy wins or anything like that, but just with expectations coming into the season, that was like the closest you were ever going to get to any sort of break from difficult games. And obviously we're looking at, this is probably one of the toughest two-game stretches that Kansas will face in quite a while, with Iowa State being undefeated in the conference and Kansas State being undefeated in the conference, and both of these teams looking absolutely phenomenal. So Iowa State, year two under TJ Otzelberger, I think my pulse on the Iowa State fanhood is that a lot of people thought it could be this good, but were people really expecting this team to again be very, very good in the non-conference, barely losing anything, and then being up at the top of the conference?
Well, I mean, the general expectation was just you lose Tyrese Hunter in them on the offseason. You're thinking this team's a tournament team. you know, that's what let's get into the tournament and we'll just be happy with whatever happens from there.
Yeah.
I think there's a couple things that we didn't know about or didn't expect maybe going in was one, the first thing we didn't know was how good Taemin Lipsey was going to be this early in his career. He is exceptionally good. I mean, you hate to make that comparison to an all-time great, but he is every bit of what Monte Morris was his freshman year. And you could maybe argue a little bit better given that he's required to handle a lot more of the load that Monte was his freshman year. So Taemin Lipsey has been outstanding. Gabe Kalscher has been much more consistent offensively. He still has his games where he's a little streaky here and there, but he's been much, much better offensively this season. And it's much more of a team basketball game this time. And actually another big name that's really taken a big step forward is Caleb Grill. He's shooting with confidence. He's making lots of stuff now. Just going to look up what his 3-point percentage is.
Yeah,
now.
It's 39.1%.
Yeah. That's right. Ridiculous. About 40% and he throws them up at pretty good volume too. So he's shooting really well from three. You really like that. Jaron Holmes has been outstanding as another guy that can just get a bucket any way you want. He can shoot the three. He can score inside. Shooting three is not necessarily a specialty, but he is shooting 37% on the year. You have a lot better, but a lot more capable scoring around the team versus Isaiah Brockington going off for 25, 30 a game, making all sorts of step back mid ranges and all sorts of everything, and just kind of willing their way to victory. I would say now the defense is actually probably better than it was last year, and the offense has been much, much better. Had a little rough stretch there in the non-conference while they were figuring stuff out, but the offense looks great right now.
Yeah, I mean, I love how you talk about how they have a little tough stretch. I mean, they lost to Connecticut, you know, on a neutral site, who was. No, or is number three at KenPom, and
say UConn's outstanding. That's what.
Oh
that's
yeah, exactly. Right, right. And then and then losing to Iowa in a rivalry game, like that's one of those where you know, yes, it's kind of sucks that you had a blowout loss on the road in that game, but those kind of things happen in rivalry games. And if that's like the only loss you look at that's even questionable, then you have to take that, especially in.
I would guess Iowa's probably a tournament team, anyways, too. So I mean, like it's. I mean, if that's like the worst thing that happens this season, a fluky blowout loss in a rivalry game on the road, granted in a terrible, terrible road environment. For any of you Jayhawk fans that don't know, Carver Hawkeye Arena is a morgue. It's just an awful, there is no home court advantage in our Carver Hawkeye Arena. But, they've played really well, man. I mean, like we thought kind of at this point they'd be, you know, maybe 1-3-2-2 type of thing or whatever. Did not expect to blow Texas Tech out of the water. Now, Texas Tech isn't as good as maybe everybody thought they were going to be. But, you know, blew Texas Tech out of the water. They handled Oklahoma State fairly well. They beat Baylor by 15. Oklahoma, TCU, they played – you know, they gutted out a tough one on the road at TCU. TCU's a good ball club. Gutted that one out and just kept trading punches with those guys and held that one out on the road. And
yeah, it's one of those. It's a combination, I think, of the Big 12 having some surprises with some of the teams that aren't necessarily as good as we thought they were going to be. But I think part of that, too, is like the Big 12 in general is – a really, really good league. I mean, for a while, everybody was in the top 40 in KenPom, and Texas Tech has fallen off a little bit, obviously. But other than that, like, this is still a conference that has a ton of really good teams. The 22nd ranked team in KenPom, and they're at 1-3 in the conference after.
This conference is still in the argument for the best conference ever in the history of college basketball.
Right.
Like better than the 80s Big East and all that or whatever. Like, this. There's probably a pretty solid argument that this is the best a conference has ever been ever in basketball history.
Yeah. It's absolutely ridiculous just how good this conference is right now. And I mean, the talk about potentially getting 9 or 10 teams into the NCAA tournament is a very real conversation. Like, now, obviously, it means a team like Texas Tech can't finish like 4 and, you know, no, 4-14 in the conference or something, but
Texas Tech has work to do.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, but, it is one of those things. I could see where Texas Tech pulls it together and, you know, ends up with 7 or 8 wins in the conference.
They're talented enough. Then, they're talented enough. Yeah. They could absolutely do it or whatever. Win your SEC game, you know, and then, and try to finish as close, you know, try to finish. Yeah. If you're within 2 games of 500 in the Big 12, you're going to have a really good shot at getting in the tournament.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
It's hard to realize.
The regular season winner of this is probably going to have four conference losses.
Well, I mean, yeah, you look at this, and Kansas over on KenPom is projected to, you know, win the league at 13-5. Like, that's the projection.
Yeah, I was going
to
say,
ridiculous.
Yeah.
And like, Iowa State's projected to go 11-7. Kansas State's projected to go 11-7. And obviously, you know, all those partial or those fractional wins and losses that get added up over on KenPom isn't how it's actually going to work, but I would be shocked if the winner of the conference has less than 4 losses, because this is a ridiculous conference. Kansas has had so many close calls. Iowa State has, you know, had some close games that they've had to close out that way as well. But like, this is one
even those are ones where Iowa State was leading most of the game, basically. Right. And they just kind of had to stave off a run at the end, basically.
Right. Well, like Oklahoma essentially like got it within 3. Kansas had a lot of, you know, struggles with Oklahoma as well. Like, these are teams that, you look at the teams that are in the bottom half of the conference right now, there's just a couple bounces is all they needed. Like, there have not been very many games at all that have been more than, you know, 1 or 2 possessions with the final score. So I will be very interested to see how many of these games go down to the wire like this, you know, throughout the rest of the season. This is a game
I would be willing to bet Saturday.
Oh gosh, Saturday better come down to the wire. I mean, these are two teams that are playing absolutely phenomenally, and you know, Kansas, for whatever reason, they have not really been able to put teams away this year, which I think is kind of part of just what they do and kind of part of the way that they play. They're also still kind of trying to figure out what they want to do. Bill Self has been very stubborn and talked a lot about trying to get some of the big men established for this Jayhawk team that have had some issues, and KJ Adams plays really well and can do a lot of different things, but, you know, Self has not been, he has not been shy to talk about the fact that they're going to need a guy like Gunnar Zude or a guy like, you know, Zach Clements or somebody, you know, Zubi Ejiofor to come on and be able to play big on the inside, which is not something that KJ Adams is very good at because he just doesn't have the build for it. And so it's one of those things where, you know, against this, you know, against Iowa State, I could still see them trying to do those sorts of things. And, you know, it's going to blow up in some cases. And Kansas has also shown huge stretches where they just go cold, where, you know, it seems like everything's going really well, and then all of a sudden they can't hit anything for a little while, and then they go back to, you know, absolutely lighting it up. Looking at what it is, though, that Iowa State does here, because, like, this feels like a different team from last year, where last year kind of everybody was taken by surprise. And while I don't think everybody expected to go this well, this does not feel like it's the same sort of team this year for Iowa State as it was last year. So what is different? What has gotten better? And what's the main contributor to the success for the Cyclones so far this year?
Like I said before, the main difference is the offense looks much better than it was. The ball's moving around. You have nowhere near as much ISO as you had before. No, like, weird, like, dead screens that don't do anything. Now you have the balls moving around. You got Caleb. You've got the nice thing too is you've got probably 3-4 guys on the roster that are capable of going off for 20, 25 points or something like that, and just being the dude. Sometimes it's Gabe Kalscher. Sometimes it's Jaron Holmes. Sometimes it's Caleb Grill. You know, and it bounces around a little bit. So you're not really looking at one specific guy that's going to go off. And like, it's not like last year where everybody could hone in on Isaiah Brockington. If you held Isaiah Brockington down, you had a pretty decent shot at it. Now he was tough to hold down, but if you did it, you could have a pretty good shot to win that game. Ball's moving around a lot better. You have multiple guys that can score the ball. They're shooting much better as a team, from 3 this year than they were last year. So, big improvement there, because they're generating. Even last year, they generated lots of open looks, but last year they just didn't knock them down at all. Yep. Doing a much better job of knocking them down this year. So you really, really like to see that. About 36% now, which is a far cry from last season.
I was saying last season was absolutely atrocious. They were like 31% last year.
They were 278th in the country in 3-point shooting last year. And now they're up in the top 100 now.
Right. You look at KenPom, right? And there's so much red on the offensive side.
It was bad last year.
Last year. This year, yep, there's some green. I mean, there's still a decent amount of red. There's still some things that you kind of have to worry about. You know, like, this is a team that does not get to the line very often.
It doesn't. It seems. They don't get to the line very often.
And it doesn't look like they particularly take care of the ball very well. You know, almost almost a 20% turnover rate, you know, and with about half of that being steals. Like, this is a team that seems to either gamble a lot and it doesn't work out for them, or just is a little bit careless at times.
It can be a little bit careless at times. The kicker with the turnover percentages, it's not as big a deal to have a mediocre turnover percentage when you look at the defensive one that's sitting right next to it. When you look at the deep, deep green number one in the country at forcing turnovers defense.
Right.
So the mediocre turn, you'd like to cut down the offensive turnovers quite a bit, but with as much as they turn people over, it's not quite as, you know, meaningful necessarily as like being a terrible, terrible shooting team was last year.
Yeah. It'll be interesting too, because like, I know that for the longest stretch, Kansas was kind of in a similar boat where they were turning it over quite a bit, but then once they turned it over, they pretty much usually got it right back or did something to that effect where it was canceling out.
Right.
Obviously this is a little bit more in favor of Iowa State with them, man, that's like a 10% difference in terms of possessions. That is kind of crazy. So, you know, another instance where you're going to have two very good defensive teams. You know, the main issue or the main difference here being that Iowa State is still struggling offensively in some cases. You know, they are 79th in offense according to KenPom, which is definitely better than last year, but still isn't like an elite level offense. So
it's not an elite offense, but it's good enough usually. And that's really what it is it's good enough.
Yeah. Well, so I guess really my question there is, it usually a case where when Iowa State has struggled, whether it's inside of an individual game or if it's, you know, the games that they actually lost, is it because the defense is giving up a lot more points than normal, or is it because the offense just has an off night and they can't keep up?
Yeah, I mean, even the two losses, Connecticut scored 71 and Iowa scored 75. So it's not like anybody was able to put up 90 on them or something like that. I mean, they're still, even on their worst days, they're still an average defense. And on their best days, they're suffocating. And it's more just like any team, though, if shots aren't going down, it's a lot harder to score. Especially, you know, getting transition buckets obviously helps. But really, if they're knocking three pointers down, they can hit, you know, be in the 70s and 80. They can be in the 70s or low 80s fairly comfortably. But it's just one of those that they, you know, it's a matter of shots going down and finding open looks, really. As long as the ball keeps moving as well as it usually does, they can find open looks. And that's really the key. I mean, they have less leeway. So like, if a bad shooting night makes it a lot harder to win, whereas other teams that have, you know, they have maybe better natural scorers, whatever you want to call it, or more just inherent talent, like a Kansas or something like that, where an off shooting night doesn't have to be a death knell because, you know, they have other scoring options type of thing. Whereas Iowa State, if the shots aren't falling from outside, like, and it's not like they're not like a Hoiberg team where they're relying on outside shots, but when, I mean, just like any other basketball team, though, is if jump shots aren't going down, it just makes it a lot harder to score. And Iowa State has fewer options at the rim and things like that than other teams, if the jump shots are not going down. Fortunately, they're still really good at getting open shots. So as long as they continue to get open shots, they have confident shooters that will keep shooting until they get them to start falling, and then that usually can help. Just a matter of when that happens, and how long the defense can hang on.
Yeah, so defensively for this team, you know, we have seen a Kansas team that can do a bunch of different things. You know, Jalen Wilson has been liable to take over a game whenever, you know, he finally deems that he wants to. Grady Dick has been a phenomenal. You talk about phenomenal three-point shooting. He's shooting 47.2% on the season with almost 100 shots. Like, it's a ridiculous amount, which I think I didn't even realize it was that high until we were just looking at it right now. But he has had some games where he'll go, you know, 5 of 5 or 6 of 6 from 3, and other games where he'll go, you know, 4 of 12. How well is Iowa State equipped to shut down an opponent's three-point shooting? Because I think where Kansas has struggled is when teams are able to kind of get out and disrupt what Grady Dick is doing, and then they're requiring on you know, a guy like DeJuan Harris to get hot, or somebody else to get hot from the outside. So like, are they extremely good 3-point shooting playing that sound defense, or is that kind of something that they've been a little bit more reliant on teams just not making the shots?
No, I mean, that's something that I would say does a good job of. They close out shots. They rotate around pretty well. I mean, every once in a while, you'll see someone that just doesn't quite, they don't quite rotate around fast enough. But for the most part, the defense is very good at closing out shooters and running people off the 3-point line. I mean, I would say it's 40th in the country right now in 3-point defense, at 30.1%. They do a good job of running teams off the 3-point line and really making them earn shots. That's not to say that Grady Dick can't have a really good game, just start hucking it up in there and it goes in. But, defensively, Iowa State's a monster on defense, and you got to be ready to go. Cause like I said, they turn people over quite a bit. So it's one of those things where I think they're going to try to speed up on defense anyways. They're going to try to speed Kansas up faster than they want to play. And try to force them into weird spots. They'll trap them down low. They'll trap them high. They'll trap low. They'll rotate around. They'll have active hands trying to jump passing lanes, things like that. It's quite the gauntlet trying to play half court defense against Iowa State. And that'll be something Kansas will have to, they'll have to knock down jump shots for sure.
Yeah. I would definitely be a lot more, or I would be extremely worried about this game if it was up in Ames this time around, just because, we're not far enough into the season to have gone through enough Big 12 games to be ready for that sort of thing. But Kansas, as we saw against Oklahoma, makes very good use of their home court advantage. Is also very able to, feed off the energy from that. I know the whole comment about refs and everything going on there. So.
The energy.
But honestly, I know.
I mean, there's a reason that Fran Fraschilla labels Allen Fieldhouse and Hilton Coliseum as his 1A and 1B.
Oh, yeah,
best,
for sure.
Best environments in college basketball. There's a reason for that. And I genuinely believe that Iowa State Kansas is one of the best rivalries in college basketball. It's phenomenal. It's always a good game. Even if Iowa State's total shit, it's always a good game. There's always a ton of energy. In both places, they're almost always really close games. Sometimes you get big moments, back in the George Niang days with the Blarge down low, or you get Donovan Jackson hitting the corner three at Fog Allen, or Kansas hitting big shots. What's his name? I can't remember. He's a point guard that dunked it at the end of the game at Hilton.
Oh, you're talking about Elijah Johnson?
Elijah Johnson, that's exactly who I was thinking of, okay. Or whatever. And he got cussed out of Ames.
I just remember the guy from the stands who tried to come out on the court after that happened. That was just kind of crazy.
Absolutely, yeah. That speaks to the heat of this rivalry. I know Bill Self loves playing Iowa State.
This is an underrated rivalry for sure.
It's totally underrated.
And it's much more obviously a basketball rivalry than it is anything else. Definitely. But I mean, for the longest time, football, we were both kind of in the same spot as a football program as well.
Yeah.
And so there was a little bit of kinship on the football field in terms of both of us suffering.
Yeah, that was like, we both suck.
Yeah, and then whatever. It was like, oh, but basketball,
we're both awesome. Then we get to basketball season, awesome, now it's a fucking rock fight. Yeah,
exactly.
Another one of those. Iowa State's, their defense puts people in hell for 40 minutes, and Kansas has a really good offense. Lots of great shooters. I mean, this is going to be a fun matchup in both arenas. I genuinely believe either team can win in both arenas. I would expect probably the home team will win in both of them. But
honestly, that's looking at it now, I was not looking at the Iowa State game, even coming into the season, without realizing how good Iowa State was going to be this year, it's like, that's going to be a tough place to win. If Kansas wins that one on the road, they will have to earn it.
Well,
and
Hilton is a crowd, Hilton's a crowd that they like threes and they like defense. Guess what? That's all this team does is defense, and they hit some threes.
I'm just chalking that game up as a loss because Iowa State's playing well enough that even if Kansas, unless Kansas is on top form, the only way that they're going to go into that game and win it is if they have when they went into Baylor, I believe it was the 2020 season, where they went into Baylor and everyone was talking about how, Baylor was a team that was that was going to be a one seed and all this stuff, and Kansas just completely demolished them, like surprising everybody. And then, of course, yeah,
now,
it was 2020 because
granted, one difference is Baylor's home court is notoriously shit.
It's going to require that type of effort, that type of
Kansas has got to be ready to go, hitting shots, everything on there, forcing turnovers, whatever. Like Kansas will have to be on their top game. Just like Iowa State will have to be on this coming Saturday.
Yeah. So looking at this game, I mean, we could probably break down a bunch of different stuff here, but I'm much more interested looking at this. What do you think is either the one matchup of individual players or like the one key stat you're going to be looking at to try to figure out how this game is going to go?
I don't know if there's a specific matchup because especially Iowa State's defense, they rotate around all the time, so it's.
Kansas does as well, too.
Both teams do that. That's extremely common in college basketball now where you're just switching off everything. So, like, yeah, whatever. I would say I would look at turnovers because that's how Iowa State makes a lot of hay, especially on defense, on offenses, scoring in transition and things like that. And Iowa State is literally number one in the country at forcing turnovers. If Iowa State can turn Kansas over and really get them sped up out of control and try to get some transition buckets, that's going to give the best shot they can have at making this happen.
Because Kansas tries to do the same thing, right? Like that's their game plan is to turn over the opponent and then turn that into points immediately. So I'll be very interested to see who's actually able to do that.
Yeah, and who stays composed, and I would say one thing that's going to be a thing that personally that I know Iowa State fans are going to watch is the free throws because they're playing at Kansas and Iowa State already puts people on the line quite a bit and they already don't go to the line a lot themselves or whatever. And you're on the road at Kansas.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the free throw disparity could potentially be pretty wide.
Well,
I'll be curious to see if
Kansas shoots 40 and Iowa State shoots 2, well then yeah, there's probably something to that. But if it's a case where Kansas is going inside to KJ Adams and trying to get,
that's what I'm saying, and they shoot
30 and Iowa State is shooting threes on the outside and only shoots, 8 or 9.
Right, that seems
reasonable. The problem is that's my context.
Kansas is gonna shoot more free throws than Iowa State, no doubt about it. But when they played down at TCU, I'll have to look at that game because let me see if I can pull that up. TCU shot an extraordinary number of free throws. TCU shot 28 free throws, and Iowa State shot 9 or whatever. And if you watch that game, TCU was not pounding it down low. They were Fran Fraschilli even tweeted about it after the game where he had Mike Miles kicking his leg out on threes and shit like that.
Oh gosh, yeah, that was ridiculous.
Like, it was horrible or whatever. Now, that's a game where you look at the free throw disparity and you're like, that's kind of janky.
Yeah, well, no, I even made a comment about that, like actually watching the game. Like, was a very clear, Miles kicked his leg out and that was the only reason there was even contact.
He did it twice.
But I just find it funny because everyone was talking about how, Kansas gets the refs to call everything for them. And like going down to Texas Tech, Kansas had 11 fouls on the entire night. And, and Tech went to the line 12 times. And, Texas Tech only had 6 fouls called on them. And Kansas only went to the line 4 times. But what everybody was talking about was, the fouls that got called at the end of the game after we had refs that were just absolutely atrocious. And I don't want to turn this into a ref bashing show, but I will.
But
I will definitely have
they've kind of deserved it. Total shit the last few weeks.
It's unfortunate, but one of the big storylines I think of the conference has been how just absolutely
awful we saw it in the NCAA tournament. We saw it in the NCAA tournament last year too, that we found out that the NCAA has no goddamn idea how to ref this conference in comparison to other conferences. Because Big 12 is I made the conference to the 80s Big East earlier. They play a lot like that. The Big 12 is incredibly physical. I mean, you're out there. Iowa State plays super, super physical. Baylor is always is. West Virginia always is. There's lots of everybody is super, super physical in this conference. And sometimes they let them play and it makes for great basketball games. Sometimes the refs turn it into the ref show and Iowa State, but every team is, there's way too many foul calls. I mean, if you look at I saw a graphic today that on average, most conferences are averaging 29 to 31 fouls a game. The Big 12 is averaging 37 fouls a game, which is insane. Crazy. Which is insane. Like, I mean, like, just
yeah,
it's crazy. Because then if you go to the NCAA tournament. And Iowa State is playing. Who the hell did they play in the first round? Because it beat LSU and Wisconsin. Then you played like Miami, and you could see this throughout the tournament. But you really noticed it against Miami too, when they shot a ton more free throws. Is that Iowa State was used to playing a style of basketball all year in the Big 12 where it's super physical. You're getting down there. You're being really really active with your hands, and that's how they get used to playing because that's how the Big 12 plays basketball. And then you go to the NCAA tournament, and all of a sudden, now you've got refs from the ACC or wherever else.
They're calling every single touch foul.
They're calling every single damn foul,
yep,
or whatever. And it throws you off your game because you're playing a totally different ball game. Well, now this year, some games they're the old Big 12 refs, and now some games they're the ACC refs or the Pac 12 refs or whatever it is.
Baylor, West Virginia,
they're calling everything.
Was a perfect example on Wednesday night. You know,
yeah.
27 fouls called on Baylor, 26 fouls called on West
Virginia.
It was like 53
horrendous
fouls. There was a stoppage like every 20 seconds, it seemed like.
What are we doing at that?
Yeah.
At some point, you need to understand how the game is going and understand like the flow of the game. And is this, in the context of this game, is this little ticky-tacky thing, does this need to be whistled? No. Because it is right now the officials seem to have this complex where they believe that they are the show and that the basketball game is just the subject of their show. And I do not understand why. It's unbelievable. And if you like Fran Fraschilla is not necessarily one to bash on the refs, but if Fran's calling out the refs,
yeah,
you're doing
right.
something
like,
wrong.
That's when you
you're
know
doing,
that
you,
it's
you're
really
doing
bad.
Something wrong if Fran Fraschilla is calling you out. Or whatever.
Look, Fran is the ultimate sunshine pumper, right? When it comes to
he absolutely
anything Big 12. So yeah,
specifically, he loves him some Iowa State and he loves him some Kansas. He loves those two, and then everybody else second.
Well, it's funny though, because I mean, he'll talk about all the the positive things,
but
when it comes to officiating, he is always talking good about the officiating, talking about how tough
right.
they have it. When
exactly.
he is calling them out as being very bad officiating, they messed up.
You've done messed up, bud. Like I don't. That's what it is. If Fran's calling you out, you messed up. And if you look at, and officials have had problems in the Big Ten and the ACC. They've had problems in other conferences too. But then you have the whole deal at TCU with Mike Miles kicking his leg out. You've had different issues at the end of other games, whatever. I don't know what the solution is, but what I do know is that right now, the state of officiating in the Big 12 and college basketball is a disaster.
Yeah, it's bad.
And I've got to be honest, I'm genuinely terrified that something could happen on Saturday just because it's going to be a loud invite. It's going to be really, really loud. It's probably going to be really physical. It's going to be close, which means that there's extra pressure on refs at the end of the game. And when it's a really, really loud crowd, for whatever reason, their brains just fall out completely out of their ass and they don't know what the hell's going on. And I'm genuinely terrified that something's going to happen on Saturday where somebody's going to get screwed.
I can guarantee you that there will be at least two or three calls that everybody will be complaining about. I don't know who's going to be complaining about them, whether it be Kansas fans or Iowa State fans.
Oh, I'm sure there's going to be two or three that each fan base is complaining about just in general.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a two or three that both fan bases are like, that was dumb.
Yeah, exactly.
There'll be two or three definite on each side and two to three mutuals that we can all complain about.
Exactly.
I'm counting on that.
Well, that just means that the refs are doing their job of bringing everybody together
to talk about
how horrible they are.
Yeah, in these trying times, we can all unite around that the refs are absolute shit.
So I think we kind of just answered the question. But ultimately, the result of this game, what do you think it's going to – or I guess – How do you see the game going? I mean, you've already kind of talked about how you think that Kansas is going to win in Allen Fieldhouse, and then Iowa State is going to win, up in Ames. But like, is this going to be one of those games where like Iowa State legitimately could win this game, and it's going to take something really strange at the end of the game for Kansas to pull it out, or like,
well,
how
I don't
do
think
you generally
like-
see this game going?
I don't think it's going to take something strange necessarily. I think both games will be very very close. Because of home court advantage, I will probably, I'm inclined to lean towards the home team in both of these. But I would say it's certainly capable of winning this game. The defense, I mean, the defense is elite by every single definition. It forces your guys to be really, really composed. And they have to be paying attention, keep their head on a swivel. Cause Iowa State will turn you over if you're not on your game 100%. That doesn't mean that's everywhere. Even in the blowout loss to Iowa, they gave up some stuff, but they were still turning Iowa over fairly well. So it's certainly a game that Iowa State can win. But it's going to be one of those where, you know, is your shooting going to travel on the road? I know, we'll find out. At TCU, they shot pretty well, but I don't even remember what their arena is called. Wherever they play is not Foggy Allen Fieldhouse. And, you know, it's one of those things like right now, because it's all this offense, like the shooting, the last few games where the shooting's been really good, feels new. So it feels unstable. So it feels like Iowa State, to a certain extent, the offense is a little bit of an unstable equilibrium where it's playing really well, but, you know, could something, you know, what's the smallest straw that can break this camel's back type of thing? Like, is it just Gabe Kalscher can't hit anything and everything just goes to complete shit? Or, what is there going to be required to throw this offense off far enough where you just can't win this game? I'm not sure. I'm actually not sure what the answer to that is. Because one thing is, you know, Trey King has come on recently. You know, he's playing in a regular rotation now that he's, you know, been eligible for a few games and he's playing really well. Provided some nice scoring punch when he needs to. He knocked down a three last game. It's a guy that I think they're trying to continue to get him more minutes and to continue to expand his role. So that's something that's a little bit different than even what we saw early in the season. Taman Lipsey is a totally different player than what we saw early in the season. Gabe Kalscher is shooting with confidence that just to the point almost unwarranted confidence, even though he went like 5 of 6 from three last game or whatever it was. And Caleb Grills just chucking it up there. You feel good about him. He's shooting almost 40%. You know, got a few guys. Jaron Holmes can go get a bucket when he needs to. I think it's going to be close. I'm leaning towards Kansas pulling it out at the end, but I mean, it's like, I'm talking like a 61-59 type of thing, or, you know, it might be maybe a little bit higher scoring, but, you know, I think if it's more than a five, like if in within the last minute, if you get to the 1 minute marker and it's more than a 5-point game, I would be kind of surprised. I mean, the final can always spread out a little bit based on fouls and stuff like that at the end of the game. But if you're like at a minute left and it's more than 5 points, I would be pretty surprised.
Yeah,
it's going to be a rock fight.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, it's kind of funny because KenPom says, you know, a 26% chance of Iowa State winning this game, and the you know, it's going to be 69-62. Like, that's their prediction, which,
yeah, it's really, you would think 69-62 should produce a higher percentage than that, which tells me that KenPom sees most of the time they see a game, you know, KenPom sees a game that's somewhere, you know, in the 3 to 10 point range, almost like a 3 to 10 point Iowa State loss almost all the time, which probably means that it's close late and then they pull away on free throws or something.
Yeah,
like
probably. But yeah, no, it will be very interesting. I will be very intrigued by who Kansas puts on Caleb Grill to try to stop him from getting hot from three in this game, because Kansas gotten burned from.
If you'd have told me a few years ago in Caleb Grill's first season that we'd be talking about it, we'd be having a podcast later on talking about who they're gonna match up with Caleb Grill to stop him.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd have slapped you in the face, or I'd have wondered what dimension I fell into, because it's funny because, you know, Caleb Grill came as a freshman with Steve Prohm and he was terrible. He was bad. And then he left to go play for TJ Otzelberger at UNLV. TJ came to Ames. Caleb Grove came back to Ames, and now he's a totally different player. He's a great defender. He's a good shooter. He's made the Matt Thomas transformation. He came from just kind of an underwhelming freshman that you can see he can shoot, but he's just not doing it. And now he's a beautiful butterfly.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, with the voice and everything. But no, I mean, it's one of those things that talks about the importance of being in the right system, because I think Otzelberger used them completely differently than what
be in the right system and be in a good culture and a good positive culture. I mean, now don't need to get into the Steve Prohm era, but like towards the end, it got bad.
Agreed.
towards the end, it got bad. As all coaches that like all regimes that are coming to an end do, they almost always get bad, and they did.
Oh yeah, for sure.
TJ showed up. He loves being here. You can tell I'm not sure Duke could ever pull him away. I'm not sure the NBA could ever pull him away. He loves Iowa State deep down into his bones, and you can tell that based on the way he's built his program and his whole roster.
It's funny because I had this conversation with Robbie Triano on our last episode, you know, about how the Big 12 has done absolutely phenomenal in terms of hiring coaches that fit cultures that really fit the schools that they're in. And I think that's why the Big 12 is as good as it is, because they find guys that they know can run programs the way that they want the programs run.
Big 12's cool. The cool kids club.
Yeah, that's all exactly. There is to it. So, all right. Well, I think we're going to go ahead and leave it there. Levi, thank you so much for joining me. For those that aren't familiar with your work, where can they find out more about Iowa State?
Wide Right Natty Light on Twitter at Wide RT Natty LT. I have a personal account that you can follow me if you want, but it's just mostly dumb shit. So
yep, and of course, come and join us over on the Wide Right Natty Light Discord
and the Wide Right Natty Light Discord. I should plug that. Andy's one of our moderators.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a great time.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's more than just Iowa State people. It's a bunch of people talking about all kinds of random sports stuff. But that is going to go ahead and do it for us today. Levi, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you have not already, please go out wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the other million apps that are out there. Just search for Rock Chalk Podcast. You can subscribe, get every episode as soon as it comes out. If you give us a rating and a review, 5 stars, nice comments, it'd be absolutely fantastic. But if for whatever reason you can't do that, just let us know what it is we can be doing better. We really do bring the podcast to you guys, get you all the information you need in as entertaining a way as possible. So if you have any comments, questions, suggestions, people you want to try to interview, anything like that, contact me by email at rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at rockchalkpod. We are, of course, part of the 1012 Podcast Network over on the Sports Drink Network. Absolutely great. All the fantastic shows that we have. And like I've been saying now for about a week or two, we do have another show that's coming. There should be an announcement here pretty soon about it. Make sure that you are following all of the great shows to cover all the teams in the Big 12 Conference, both the current ones and the new ones coming in, by going to 1012network.com, and you can get all those links, or following them on Twitter at 1012network. Make sure you visit our sponsors, Home Field Apparel, promo and Prize Picks. Use that promo code to get some great deals. But that's going to do it for us today. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you guys next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Podcast Network.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.